Hello, and welcome to SearchCRM.com. I'm Lauren Horwitz, Executive Editor in the Business Applications and Architecture Group. And today we're going to talk a little bit about subscription-based models for CRM software and how it changes kind of the revenue generation stream for companies and also potentially the relationship between companies and customers. So to talk about some of these issues, I have with me today Dennis Pombriant, President and CEO of Beagle Research. So welcome, Dennis.
Hey, Lauren, how are you?
Hey. So Dennis, my first question slash statement is, we talked about this a little bit on Friday. Salesforce just released its performance numbers for the past quarter and for its fiscal year, which just ended. And they've showed significant growth, maintaining a trend that goes back as far as their IPO, really. So what does that say about the company and the subscription model in general?
Well, Lauren, Salesforce has proven itself to be a great company on a lot of dimensions. They've won awards for being the best company to work for. They lead Gartner's Magic Quadrants in several CRM categories. And they're obviously growing and making money, and that's all good. But I'd rather focus on what this means for subscription companies generally, because Salesforce is not an accident. And I think that's one of the major takeaways. Lots of companies are benefiting from the subscription model because it gives them a new way to cost-effectively bring solutions to their customers. It enables them to collect customer use, billing, and feedback data. And all of that leads to stronger relationships and happier customers because that data gets munged and in analytics. So net-net, subscriptions are a boon for business, for all the businesses that have tried them.
Now let's talk about what is the effect of subscription metrics, like deferred revenue, about a company's performance, and how does that relate to subscription vendors in general?
Well, everything I just said is predicated on using subscriptions correctly, and success with subscriptions is not automatic. So developing metrics about how your customers use your service and the indicators of what they like and they don't like is really key because there's less direct contact between a vendor and the subscriber. As a group, subscribers like to take something and get it done. And truth be told, there's a period early in the subscription relationship when a vendor might actually lose money as customers come up to speed and call for support or generally do things that have a cost associated with them. So developing metrics about things like time to first use, ratio of users to total provisioned, time using the product, and many other things begins to give a vendor a sense of how things are going. It also gives a vendor, through analytics, the ability to see who needs help and to proactively offer it rather than waiting until a customer is frustrated and maybe quits. Now, as you asked about deferred revenue, what deferred revenue is all about is, in one way or another, money that has not been counted as revenue. So, for example, a vendor might sell a one-year subscription or a three-year subscription, and the customer may pay that all at once, but the vendor will only recognize 1/12 of the annual subscription each month as that money becomes due and collectible. Having deferred revenue on the books and unbilled deferred revenue, such as revenue in the second and third year of the relationship, provides really good insight into the future revenues of a company. One of the things that the Salesforce numbers came out with last week was just how big their deferred revenues were and their unbilled deferred revenues, all of which excuse me, suggests that the company's growth will continue over time.
So, Dennis, we've talked a little bit about why the subscription-based model is good for companies, but what about on the customer side? Are subscriptions beneficial for customers as well?
Oh, sure. With subscriptions, customers have the unique ability to buy only what they want and need and to pay for it as they use it rather than making a capital expense purchase. This approach brings more people and businesses into a market, giving them the ability to use things that they couldn't otherwise. So on a personal level, a business like Rent the Runway might enable you to wear couture outfits, and in businesses, we've seen numerous small companies be able to use the same sophisticated software products as much larger companies because they're affordable, and that enables the smaller companies to reduce the competitive disadvantage from being small.
And it might also defray some kind of big lump sum upfront cost that customers have to pay by and kind of breaking it up into these smaller monthly fees. Is that right?
Absolutely. You pay for what you use.
But let's talk a little bit about downsides. You know, when we talk about the cloud, one of the big concerns is hidden costs, which can certainly come into play in a monthly subscription environment. Do you think that's a factor, or other downsides that you want to talk about?
Well, I suspect there are downsides. I don't know about hidden costs. I think anybody who gets into a subscription solution should understand that just because it's a subscription doesn't mean that there won't be costs associated with learning how to use the product or setting up the product or integrating a product with the rest of your situation. So those things don't go away with subscriptions. Many subscription vendors expose APIs, for example, if they're talking about technology, that make integration easier, and they make configuration easier than coding. But the fact of the matter is that you still got to do those things. And I've seen companies where subscription vendors who appealed to segments of the market who could afford the monthly nut, so many dollars per user per month, but couldn't afford the implementation costs, for example. And in some cases, the implementation costs of a subscription product might be comparable, probably lower, but more comparable to conventional product and service. And so the subscription customer needs to be aware of that.
So what does all of this say about kind of the spreading of the subscription-based model, and should vendors consider it?
Well, I think inevitably they will have to, because I think we've moved into a subscription culture. A few years ago, people started talking about the subscription economy, and I think we're beyond simple economy. We're into culture now. Customers have been trained to expect the kinds of products and services that subscriptions uniquely offer. Now, even if you are not a subscription vendor, you find that you increasingly have to deal with customers who have those expectations. That's why it's a subscription culture. So I think one way or another, vendors are increasingly becoming aware that they have to embrace this.
And so finally, just to get back to Salesforce, you've been vocal in predicting the company's entry into the Fortune 500. Do you think this is the year?
Well, prognosticating is always difficult. If you go by the numbers, it could be. But keep in mind that Salesforce won't be the only company knocking on that door. And a lot of things can happen in the next 12 months. But that said, the math supports the notion.
Right. Certainly looking that way. Okay, well, many thanks to you, Dennis, for taking the time to join us today.
It's my pleasure.
And for more on subscription-based models and on CRM, check out searchcrm.com. And until next time, I'm Lauren Horwitz.